Hey, everybody, and welcome to the AC Podcast for Tuesday, April 18th, 2017. If you don't know why, this is a very important day. You will very soon. And I'm joined by three very special people. I love using that word special because, we've only had Mr. Michael Fisher on a couple of times before, and we love having him. So welcome to the podcast.
I love being here, Daniel. Thank you for having me on this global holiday for smartphone fans.
This global holiday, which we will discover in a moment. Florence Ion, back for another podcast. How are you doing?
That's me. And by the way, today, April 18th, there are a lot of celebrities born on this day, including but not limited to Kourtney Kardashian, David Tennant, and Conan O'Brien.
Hey.
Wow.
And James Woods and Rick Moranis as well.
Did you just IMDb that?
Yes. So today is a very special day,
I'm impressed.
To being the birthdays of a Kardashian.
And Wayne Szalinski, which I would have led the list with that, but yeah.
Well, staying silent with not interrupting with any celebrity birthdays is first timer to the AC podcast, David Ruddick from Android Police.
How are you, man? I'm doing good. I didn't want to get in on the pre-show banter before I was introduced, because then it's like, who is this person talking?
Who is the mystery voice? No,
I have no problem jumping in on Twitter.
I don't. I jump in all the time.
Just kidding.
No, I do though.
Oh, that's so saucy. I love it. All right, so we have assembled this ragtag group of people to talk about none other than the Galaxy S8, which is going on sale on Friday, April 21st, but the embargo lifted today, April 18th, hence the national holiday. And we want to talk the crap out of it, because now we can actually give our opinions that are our own. So let's start. David, you published your review on Android Police. Michael Fisher, you published yours on Mr. Mobile's YouTube channel and AC. Mm-hmm. Flo, you had the, I guess, privilege, I want to say, of publishing the first Android review on the new iMore, which is totally crazy to me, because if you haven't, you know, if you don't know iMore, it is traditionally, or has been traditionally, an Apple themed blog. And I published mine on AC. So we all have our own Galaxy S8 and S8 Plus reviews up, and we will link to those in the show notes. But let's begin. David, you said that these are probably the two best mainstream Android phones you can buy, but I plucked that word out of your title, mainstream. And AP tends to go, you know, lean a little bit more towards like the hardcore tech, you know, feeds and speeds type of user. So why don't you give me your impressions and we'll go from there.
Okay. I think that when I say mainstream, I mean that there are a lot of considerations that I think, you know, like you said, our readers are really, really looking at when it comes to when they're buying a phone, that 99% of other human beings that are normal aren't looking at. So a lot of that comes down to, you know, things like, how much value am I getting for my dollar? I have specific needs. I want to customize certain things. I don't like certain things about Samsung's business model, maybe. And those are all things that, well, that's why I said mainstream, because there are always going to be those concerns that people have with Samsung, I guess. And so with the S8, though, I think that for the mainstream consumer, I think they built a really great phone for the most part. I was using the S8 Plus, and I found the battery life to be really good. I love the display, despite the kind of issues with the red tint that people have pointed out. It didn't bother me too much. I barely noticed it. And, you know, overall, the Infinity display, you get so much stuff on a screen in such a relatively compact package. I mean, the S8 Plus is a really big phone, really big. It's really tall. But the trade-off there, as far as the display you're getting, I think it's worth it. But I think for most people, the regular S8's about the right size.
So, Flo, you've been using the S8 and S8 Plus together. Got both of them in midnight black, which is the best color, even though I'm sure of this you'll have convinced me that the orchid gray one is the best because you can't stop talking about it.
And it's on the way to my house, so...
Oh, good, okay.
There's no way in heck I was going to stick with those midnight black ones, but go on.
So what are your impressions? Which one do you prefer? And, you know, is the big display, is it an encumbrance at all? Have you found it to be a little bit harder to use the phone?
No, I love big phones. I love bigger phones. I've been a fan of the big phones, I think, before, I want to say before Apple started making the sort of larger variant of the iPhone. I just like to have more screen space. I have such a deep relationship with my phone, and having a smaller screen is just not as satisfactory. And I think too, with like the smaller GS8, it's really slippery. It's small and thin, which is great. And I totally understand for people who put their phone in their pocket that this is going to be the right size. But I had a lot of trouble just multitasking on it, even replying back to people, because, you know, I have long nails and it was kind of hard just like tap on the screen. I overall enjoyed the S8 Plus, and I was kind of bummed when I had to ship it out yesterday.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so you think like the S8 Plus having a bigger screen is a little bit, makes it a little bit easier to use?
For me, it does, but it's just because of the fact that like I wear jewelry and I have nails, and so it's harder for me to type with like one thumb or to do sort of the swipe typing, which I don't really like that anyway. I am a two thumb typer. I like to be able to have both thumbs, you know, active and going. And because I carry a phone in a bag or like in a wallet case, it doesn't really bother me how big it is. And I have to say, too, the GS8 Plus just felt like it was easier to handle overall. Whereas I have to tell you, there are a couple of near misses with how I was dropping the GS8. I really hate to admit it, but there are a couple of banana moments.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So, Michael, you tend to, you know, you've been critical of Samsung and its products in the past. And, you know, I think you were pretty liberal with your praise for the Galaxy S8 and S8 Plus. Which one are you leaning more towards at this point?
Sure. Yeah, it's weird. It's funny to me that we're all sort of on the same page here, because I'm usually the one who puts one-handed use above everything else. So after the hands-on and wherever we were, I forgot where we were for that. The last time we did a podcast like this, I was like, oh, I definitely am going to, if I were to buy one of these, I would go for the smaller one just because I need to be able to use it with one hand while I'm on the go. But I ended up getting the S8 Plus first of the review batch, and I really glommed onto it. I was just looking something up. I was stunned to find that the Galaxy Mega, like 2013 Samsung Galaxy Mega, was 6.3 inches. Remember that? That was 6.3 inches.
I remember. So I reviewed it didn't that fit phone. In any pocket.
Oh, massive. My God. Yeah. It was just what a monster, too. Right? And this is essentially the same diagonal screen size. And, of course, the aspect ratio change is what really makes it, because I'm holding it right now, and I do not find it unmanageable really much at all, unless I have to reach up to the notification shade. Yes. So,
and you get all that screen too.
Yeah.
So you can still like manage it, and you still get 6.3 inches, which I like to watch video like on trains and stuff, and
right.
I like to have it on a slightly bigger screen.
But especially when it's in portrait too, like just having all that expansive area for lists, you know. I mean, I think probably like 93% of my smartphone use is probably just like seeing what's on Twitter. Which makes me the best for power users who are always like, weren't you on benchmarks? I'm like, because, you know, Instagram is really hard to run.
Yeah.
But I love having all that vertical space, and it's such a luxury on this phone.
I can confirm it's a good Twitter phone.
Yeah. It is a good Twitter phone. It's also, I measured the frame rate of scrolling through the Instagram feed, and it's a good 10 frames per second faster than the Galaxy S7 Edge. So
when the Instagram app isn't hanging because it's Android 7.0 and that happens for some reason.
So let's talk a little bit about that new aspect ratio. None of us are unfamiliar with tall phones, given that we've all used the LG G6 for some time. David, we'll start with you. What do you think? Is this the future of smartphone screens, given that Samsung has such a huge influence over the industry? Or do you think we'll eventually return to 16:9?
Well, I think that unless human hands get a lot bigger, going up tends to be the most palatable option for making a phone larger at this point. Because when you get wide, that's when phones start to get really kind of dicey to use one-handed. I remember my Nexus 6, and that's a really wide phone.
Oh,
and
my God.
And that thing was, I was constantly dropping that phone. If I was trying to type out an email in bed, oh, my God, I would drop it on my face over and over.
And that hurt, too. Oh, my God.
It did. It was a heavy phone.
That's so sad. I love that phone so much.
I still have my Shamu, but I think, yeah, that the 18:9 aspect ratio is, I would bet it's here to stay. I think it's apart from there are certain types of content that don't play well to it, I guess, like video, you know, where you get the black blocks on the side, or you have to, you know, zoom in essentially. That's less than optimal, but everywhere else, it's pretty much a win. You get more content, and a taller phone isn't hugely harder to manage versus a wider one.
Right. So you mentioned video, and obviously, you know, 18:5:9 is never going to be an accepted aspect ratio for video. I think, you know, we have a few cinematic aspect ratios, 1.85:1, 2.35:1, but generally most video, especially, you know, internet video, is 16:9. Samsung does a decent job making not only video, but everything conform to the new screen. But it does so, Michael, to, you know, by essentially cropping the sides. And you showed Super Mario Run in your video that it does actually have an effect on some apps. And, you know, this is not enabled by default for a lot of the apps, but some of them, I think Samsung does either there's a flag in the app itself, or I don't know how Samsung determine whether some apps should be optimized and some shouldn't. But I mean, do you think that this is a problem for early adopters, or have you found an issue with having those black bars on the top and bottom of the screen?
You know, it's funny. I hear more conversation about that than I think it's important to talk about, but I don't think most people, I may be wrong, I don't think most people care too much about the letterboxing or pillar boxing. To begin with, you already have this a large amount of space. You have a lot of acreage to fill. And I think a lot of people just plain won't notice. I am the opposite of that in that I do notice, and I hate it when the screen is not being fully utilized. So I will stretch anything. And when you do that, somebody who, like if you're watching a video featuring someone talking to the camera, like a newscast or like every YouTube video, like something that's been really well cropped to where there's a good amount of headspace above their head, suddenly their forehead will be like going through the top bezel. And that can get a little annoying, I guess, but more annoying to me personally is not filling up those beautiful rounded corners that I've loved since the Palm days. So, you know, I'm just grateful the option is there, that in most apps you can choose whether you want to see it scaled or stretched or not.
Well, I think that Apple has conditioned some of us that way though, right? Over the years with the 4/3 ratio, when they were pushing that. And so all the video would have to be zoomed in, and everybody got used to that being a thing.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, actually. You mean when they changed from, like, have they conditioned us via 4/3 for, like, through the iPad and stuff like that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. It could be.
I was going to say, I will say that the taller screen, at least on the GSA Plus, makes it a little harder to kind of reach up there for the notification shade. And I'm bummed because you can access that notification shade with the fingerprint scanner on the back or sensor or whatever, but it doesn't always work, especially, you know, if your hands are a little greasy that day or whatever's going on with the phone. So it's like there's, you know, the taller screen, yay, I get like a little bit more room for the interface, and absolutely it's great for Twitter and most apps and multitasking. But then there's a couple interface elements that rely on you reaching up to the top of that screen, and it makes it a little hard when you can't fully grip the phone.
So what you're saying is you want an LG G6 like down button on the navigation bar at the bottom, like Michael and I love and,
that.
And hesitate to publicize, but
it's so hacky.
It's so
it's
hacky.
My favorite it's thing. It's the greatest. I don't. Why didn't they do the swipe down in Samsung? Like, why can't you swipe down to that? Why does swiping down trigger the app drawer just like swiping up does? That doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know.
That's a design decision that makes. I think it makes sense in somebody's mind more than it does in reality.
Yeah.
Because I agree with you 100%. There is no like OnePlus does this actually on its own launcher. OnePlus has figured out that people don't want to swipe down from the notification shade when they can do it anywhere on the screen, any unused place on the screen. And I think Samsung, it was going more for, I guess, seamlessness than you know, user experience here, because I that is a wasted opportunity. But let's go back to the fingerprint scanner on the back of the phone, because this is the biggest change. It's justified by having that massive display, with no bezels, but this placement is infuriating.
It is.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's awful.
Absolutely.
Genuinely.
And
it's gnarly, bros.
Okay, so David, here's the question. Why was it not put underneath the camera like practically every other phone today? What reason did Samsung have to put it on the side?
To me, there are one of three explanations. One, that Samsung's just stupid about symmetry and they wanted that, I guess. And so you want one thing on one side, one thing on the other. It's the same. Option number two, I think, is that maybe there's something in the way the phone's constructed, laid out, that made it much more difficult to put lower. I have a fourth option now that I'm just realizing as I'm looking at the phone. The third option is the conspiratorial option, which is they wanted to do the fingerprint scanner on the screen, which is why you have an always-on home button that's kind of nifty, but actually kind of useless for most purposes. And they couldn't do it. And so they had to go with plan B, which again, kind of goes back to why put it there in the first place though. Or option four, they didn't put it lower down because then the Samsung logo wouldn't have had anywhere to go.
They could have made the Samsung logo into the fingerprint sensor.
They could have.
Oh my gosh. That would have been, I would leave it to Samsung to do that in a classy way. I think they could.
Really? I mean, this is the first Samsung phone that doesn't have the logo on the front, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah, I always forget that.
Oh, shoot, you're right. Yep. Oh, yeah. I'm looking at the GS7 Edge right now.
I mean, back in the Note, was it Note 4 days? I'm not in the U.S., so our carriers aren't as blatantly terrible about branding. Had the Verizon logo
that
on
was
the
Note
power?
2. That was the Galaxy Note 2, had the Verizon checkmark on the power button, on the home button, and like the whole internet just lost its shit, and justifiably so, because boy, that was rough.
Yeah.
Truly shameless.
That was bad.
You think Verizon people would be used to it by now? Come on. I speak as a Verizon customer.
But I mean, that also speaks to the fact that since 2011 or 2012, Samsung has gained considerably more influence over the carriers. I mean, you know, just looking at the difference between the various LG SKUs and the Galaxy S8 SKUs, you know, you still have bloatware, but it's not nearly as offensive.
Yeah, you're so right, Dan. It's like the iPhone, because when it was an AT&T exclusive here, one of the reasons was because Verizon, I guess, wanted to put its branding all over it. And so it had to sort of say, well, we really want this phone because we want that prestige. And so I guess Samsung has that prestige now.
I mean, there is bloatware, so it's not exactly the same as the iPhone. But and on my unit, I have a TELUS unit. I have one app and one shortcut to a Play Store app. So two things that are on here. Is it like that in the US as well?
I forgot. Yeah,
these T-Mo ones.
Yeah, so I think I cleared most of the app. Every T-Mobile app that I could delete, I did. So that leaves two that I can't delete. Were there more than that, Flo?
I just kind of accepted it.
There are three apps that I can find that you can't get off of there. There's the official T-Mobile app, which can't be taken off. Then there's the T-Mobile, what is it, the name ID. And then there is the one that actually bugs me, Lookout.
Oh my gosh. Ugh. You don't need to scan everything.
Right. And every time you can disable it, which I did.
Because otherwise we'll scan every app you install.
Yeah. But you don't remember it's there until after you've used the phone for a bit.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't like pop up immediately. It's like the little silent friend who's been hiding in your closet this entire time. And then after everyone's left the party, it just like comes out of the closet. It's like, hey, you remember me?
You're
like, whoa, what are you still doing here?
You definitely need some better friends, I think.
Yeah. That's
how
like,
I feel about Lookout. That's how I feel about it.
Insidious image in my mind.
It is.
Okay.
Icon's green.
I wanna talk about the home button now that it's no longer a real button. Obviously with the fingerprint sensor moved to the back, controversial placement, it's a lot easier to get to on the S8 than the S8 Plus, but I'm not down on the home button on the front home button, because I actually really like the facial recognition and the iris scanning, and I think it works. And this is going to take a bit of we're going to have to go around, but I know that, you know, even talking to David before, he was not, and you're not happy with the facial biometrics. Is that just something that you kind of gave up on, or do you think that like you'll stick with it?
Oh, I completely gave up on the face and iris. The iris with glasses is just, it's not worth it. You know, Samsung says it should work fine with glasses and darker environments, but just getting the positioning right is too hard. It's too much. I have to think about too much when I use it. I don't want to think about unlocking my phone. I want to just do it. And the facial recognition, a little better probably, but again, doesn't probably work well in the dark. I just didn't have any motivation at the end of it. So I'm sticking with the truly awful fingerprint scanner, because that's my only option. My hit rate on the iris scanner was probably 20% at best. So it was totally unusable. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not my experience at all.
Yeah, wow, that's the worst I've ever heard on the iris scanner. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, if I take off my glasses, it's a lot better, but obviously that's not terribly convenient for me.
No, obviously not. I don't wear glasses, but I was very surprised to find that the iris scanner worked quickly for me, and even when I put on sunglasses, it was absolutely fine. So I was like, okay, well, let me really trip it up. I'll turn out all the lights in this room, put on sunglasses, and try to unlock the phone with just the Philips Hue lights I have in the corner. And it worked fine.
It should actually work better in the dark.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah,
that
was the next point I was gonna make. Yeah, is the only way I could actually get it to consistently screw up was to go outside in the bright sunlight, and then it doesn't know what it's doing.
Here's the interesting thing, is that there's no way to dynamically switch between the two, because as you said, face recognition works really well in light, because it uses the front facing camera, and iris scanning works better in the dark, but Samsung is not smart enough to give you that option dynamically. You actually have to,
it says it in the settings, you can only
explicitly
use one at a time.
Choose one or the other.
Yeah.
Flo, what has your experience been with that stuff?
I have just sort of relegated myself to pattern unlock.
Really?
I mean,
wow.
It's just like,
that's so regressive. I'm so sorry.
I know, but the fingerprint scanner like barely works. And you know, guys, I'm trying to keep my hands nice and young here, so I lotion them throughout the day, right? I can't, you know what I mean? It's like every time I handle the phone, it gets super greasy. It's better when there's a case on, but then when there's a case on, I have a couple here from Spec right now. It's really hard to actually kind of stick my finger in there to get it to scan. And then with the facial recognition, I don't really know what's going on with that, because it had no problem scanning in my face in the initial setup, and that was like relatively quick. And then there were some instances where it just worked like magic, and this was kind of in my dimly lit bedroom. And then there were other times where I'd be here in my bright office and it wouldn't work at all. So I just kind of gave up. And then I didn't really, to be honest with you, at that point, I was kind of frustrated. I was like, I'm not going to bother with the iris scanning. I'm just going to do it the way I've been doing it with the pattern unlock. So,
Michael, is that, do you think that's the experience a lot of people will have, is that they'll run through the gamut of you know, non-pattern, non-password unlocking procedures and get fed up and just revert back to the good old pattern or PIN?
I don't know. You know, I'm not sure that, if anything, this conversation has shaken my faith that I know anything about human behavior, because we all seem to be reacting so differently to this thing.
I don't have time for this.
Yeah, well, that's it. And you know, both you and David, I agree with, like, I don't want to think about unlocking my phone either. And even when the iris scanner is working well, the fact that you can't really do it from waist level, you know, if you just pull your phone out of your pocket, you want to look at it real quick and see a notification or reply, like, no, it wants you to pull it up to, like, your, at least your chest or your chin level, and then it can sort of see you.
So you're holding it out for people to snatch it out of your hands.
Yeah,
in public.
Right. Right, because you live in San Francisco, I forgot. but yeah, so I don't know. I think this is definitely a miss as far as what most people will do. Yeah, I think we'll see a lot of people do the PIN or the pattern, or let's not forget trusted devices. That's a really handy thing if you're willing to do it, if you wear a smartwatch and just... your phone's unlocked all the time if you have it on you, which is fun.
Okay, so I'm going to offer a completely different take on it. I've been using Face Unlock, and it works 99% of the time. I'm not even joking. It's reliable. It's fast. I have enabled the ability to turn the screen on by tapping the invisible home button, and it turns on the screen. It starts scanning for my face right away. And it may not be as fast as the fingerprint sensor, but it's pretty close. I'm not exaggerating. I have no issues unlocking this phone, to the point where I actually have not been using the fingerprint sensor very much because the face recognition is so fast and so accurate. I don't know why I'm having such a different experience to you guys. I think it may be because I don't wear glasses, or I have no idea.
You only hang out in the dark?
You know what? I don't, because
I mean, the face unlock doesn't really work that well in the dark. It works far better in daylight. But even in the dark, even in a kind of a gloomy indoor lit room, I don't have a problem with it. So that's, to me, it's troubling. It's troubling that everybody has such different experiences with it. I'm happy that I don't, but I'm wondering whether this could be a software thing.
I think you've got fingerprint scanner Stockholm syndrome, Dan. I think that's what's going on here. I think the fingerprint scanner is so bad that you're seeking refuge anywhere you can find it. And that is the face unlock. Because I go back to my Pixel and I'm like, oh, this isn't dumb. I can get into my phone.
I love the fingerprint sensor on the Pixel. It's so good. Even after I've, you know, washed my hands or whatever.
Yeah, I just had the similar experience moving back into the G6 today. I was like, oh, wow, yeah. Oh, this is how it's supposed to feel.
Because it's not like you do this hundreds of times a day or something, you know. it's one of those things that's just, it can bug you so much.
That said, I'm starting to get a lot of the comment backlash now where people have seen so much S8 coverage that the super hardcore fans are like annoyed that the fingerprint scanner is always being called out. And there's a lot of like, it's not that bad. You get used to it in 2 hours. And you really don't.
You don't. You don't. You really don't. It is a daily struggle.
Yeah, it's actually bad. But okay, on the flip side, and I'm sorry, Bader, I would just like that we have five options to unlock the phone. You will find one that works for you. That's my...
Or just live life free and dangerously.
Wow. Wow.
That's scary.
Bad call.
That's not a good idea.
That's not advice, by the way. That wasn't advice, by the way.
So here's another thing. Because I'm using the S8 Plus, which is even ostensibly harder to find that fingerprint sensor. But I've gotten to the point now where when I put my hand in my pocket to get the phone out, my index finger, and I'm doing that right now. I'm not playing with myself, I promise. my index finger goes and finds the fingerprint sensor. So, you know, again, like, sure, I'm the fanboy amongst the four of us, but it does seem like I think y'all are thinking about this a bit too much.
No. Peter, you know what this is? You know who you are? You're the guy who, when the Galaxy S5 came out, is the one guy who stuck up for that dumb swipe fingerprint sensor and was like,
I'm not. I'm not, actually. I hate that thing.
Come on, guys. This is a friendly podcast.
No. I just mean, like, I think in retrospect, I think everyone is going to agree next year when this is not an issue that this is actually really horrible.
I agree.
For now, since we have to live with it, we're being friendly.
No, it's fine. I'm just gonna have to write like a really great essay about this and get hundreds of thousands of views and get to the top of Reddit defending this fingerprint sensor.
LOL.
Yes. And then y'all can just kiss my butt. Okay, so we'll not agree on this. And that I think, to me, that is actually the biggest problem. Like, you know, I understand that everybody's going to have a different opinion, but very few people have a different opinion about, as David said, the Pixel's unlock features, right? The fingerprint sensor on the Pixel, it's fast. The Mate 9, it's instant. You know, it just works. So then we have to talk about whether this was a mistake about whether Samsung had intended to put that fingerprint sensor under the glass. David, do you know anything about this nascent technology? Do you know, have your little birdies told you anything about how far along the under the glass fingerprint sensor is in terms of being ready for the market?
You know, the only reason I take a lot of stock in the idea that Samsung is doing that is that I heard about this probably 4 years ago. Somebody told me that they had seen, they had seen the Samsung laboratory, that Samsung was testing this technology, and they were very excited about it. And that was 4 years ago. So I think it's a safe bet that they really do want to make it happen. And I think the design of the phone tells that story too, with the always-on home button, you know, the very clean front of the device. I think everything was in place, and maybe they just had a contingency plan. Well, if we don't get the yields or the technology isn't ready, well, we have a plan B. But I have to think they're working on it. I would be deeply surprised if they weren't going, working toward that goal.
Okay. So has everybody said everything they want to say about the design, the screen?
I have one more thing if nobody else has anything.
Go for it.
You ask a very good question in your review, Daniel, about whether I would have preferred this implementation concerning fingerprint scanner versus screen or whatever, or had them use a button again with a fingerprint sensor in its traditional place. I have to say that even given everything I've just said about the fingerprint sensor being terrible, in a terrible position, I would still take it over having a button again. Because I think the button just made it feel so archaic and so ugh that I'm prepared to live with it and not complain about
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And that I think is important to note, because we're like, this fingerprint is so terrible. Yeah. But it's like, yo, the way it was in the home screen or in the home button, I wasn't really feeling that. And to that end, I never use the fingerprint sensing, scanning, whatever, on the last two gen phones, because it was just it was kind of annoying. I wasn't really into it.
But what if they did it like OnePlus and you just have an indent where on the chin?
That would have been better. That would have been better. Yeah, because I always accidentally knocked the home button when I was trying to scan it in or whatever.
Yeah, but then, like, look at the phone, look at the bottom bezel, it doesn't allow for enough for that space. So I would not have wanted to sacrifice these very beautifully thin bezels top and bottom for that personally.
I look at the OnePlus and I especially the Midnight Black one. I mean, it's a nice phone, and then that fingerprint sensor just sticks out a little bit. I feel the same way about the Moto Z. I feel the same way about the new Moto G. I mean, these are phones that are compromise is inherent to the design, because, at least OnePlus allows you to use that fingerprint sensor as a home button, even when the capacitive keys are turned off. So you basically have three options. You can use on-screen buttons and ignore the home button. You can use the home button and capacitive keys to either side, or a combination. But I think that's kind of kludgy, and I think that Samsung's on the right track here. I agree with you that the biometrics, the unlocking, it's too confusing and it's not as foolproof. There's too much cognitive dissonance. If there's any cognitive dissonance in an unlocking procedure at all, then it's too much.
Right.
So, to me that is more alarming. But yeah, Michael, I appreciate you bringing that up because I agree. The
great question.
The display is this phone. I mean, for all intents and purposes, it is basically just a screen surrounded by metal.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it does. It allows, you know, like we were talking about, you know, the images I was able to get for my review just because of the tininess of the bezels, it really is striking. And I mean, I wouldn't want Samsung to have to compromise on that. I just wish they would have placed it in couldn't they? Why? It could have just gone in the middle on the back.
Must have been a battery size thing.
I guess. I don't know. It's just so frustrating. I mean, if they had to make the phone a millimeter thicker, would I be willing to compromise on that? Absolutely. To get the fingerprint scanner in the right place. Without question.
Okay. So next thing that's annoying, next thing that I think everybody is going to have an opinion of, Bixby. Okay. This is Samsung's ostensible AI assistant. It's not really an assistant yet. I don't know if it's powered by AI at this point either. So let's talk about it. Michael, you got to demo this phone in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. You got to see a little bit more of what it'll look like. And you were with Flo as well. But right now, Bixby's sort of half-baked. Is this something that you're excited about? Is it something that you have used at all? And is it something that you think will live up to Samsung's lofty expectations?
Yes, no, and no, respectively.
Got it.
Flo and I were in the same briefing in San Francisco, and we saw the sort of hands-off demo where somebody from Samsung was showing us everything there was that Bixby could do theoretically. And the stuff that it can already do, as I think somebody mentioned a bit ago, is like nothing is new to it. Like it's there's reminders. Oh, it was you, Bader, in your video. It's like it does reminders and it does all the stuff that Google now already does, or any number of assistants you can get on a lot of phones. The voice thing is really compelling. Being able to like just hold down a walkie-talkie button and say, open my gallery, now rotate that photo, now send it to my mom, and then, you know, whatever you want to tell it to do. Like, Samsung literally promised anything you currently do on your phone that you tap to, Bixby should be able to do by voice. Like, I wrote it down because I couldn't believe they said it. And I couldn't believe they said it because it's such an outlandish promise that there's no way they can live up to it. So, of course, it's not finished. It's never going to be finished. I don't think it's ever going to work. But I really am excited to see what happens when they do release it, when they say, okay, this is good enough. This is going to blow people's socks off. I can't wait. I think that's going to be a lot of fun to try. I don't have high hopes though.
Okay, David, why then did Samsung put a dedicated button, a phone that is all about minimalism, all about cutting down on excess? I mean, this is Samsung version of cutting down excess. This is not maybe an accepted version, but Samsung's definition. Why put a dedicated button on the side there? And why underneath the volume button where you're going to accidentally press it all the time?
Exactly. I agree with Michael that I think Samsung had this kind of very Star Trek-y vision of voice control. And if that's their vision, the button makes sense. That said, I don't necessarily think that Samsung made a case that people would even actually necessarily want to use that at a mass market level. And Samsung's a mass market company. So I never got a compelling story about why Bixby is something that's going to be so important that it needs the button, and that normal people are going to use this, and that once they use it, they're never going to go back. You know, there's something weird about talking to your phone. Most people, I find, don't use voice commands on their phone, just because it's kind of odd. I mean, the touchscreen is a very effective interaction medium. A voice can be cumbersome and inaccurate if your phone misunderstands you, for example. The rest of Bixby is a complete afterthought. Garbage. Totally useless. There's just nothing compelling there. Not a single thing. Bixby Vision is a crappy version of Google Goggles. Bixby's feed thing, whatever that's called, Hello Bixby, is a crappy version of Google Now. And Bixby Reminders is a crappy version of a Reminders app. It's all just garbage.
Dang, Bose.
Do you corroborate that smelly garbage flow?
I guess I'm the outlier here. Obviously, just like the rest of you, I really don't know what it is that Bixby is supposed to do yet. All I can sort of envision is that Samsung had given us a demo at the initial hands-on where Bixby, you basically told it to edit a photo, and it just went through all the filters and the cropping mechanisms and the saving and all that and posted it to Facebook for you with just a couple of voice commands. And I was just sort of thinking as I was watching that demo a little more theoretically about what sort of is down the smartphone what is the smartphone future? I mean, I think the future is not really going to be a phone. It's going to be something like that, just a virtual assistant that you can talk to and trust that it's doing what you wanted it to do without sort of watching a screen to ensure that it's doing that. But it's also that future is kind of far down the line. But TLDR, I kind of feel like this is the beginnings of that or just the idea of that. And so maybe that's why I'm having a tiny bit more optimism about it than maybe some other people's. But I mean, I also agree with David and Michael that there are a lot of features that are a part of it that aren't really necessary. Like, it is redundant to have another feed when Google already provides all that for me anyway. And do I need a notes app? No, I have Google Keep. I mean, I want to stay within the Android ecosystem while using a Samsung phone. You know what I mean? So, yeah, a little redundancy, but.
But I mean, redundancy is one thing. You know, app duplication is a common theme in the Android space. It's not even limited to Samsung. Samsung is the biggest, culprit here, given that it actually has its own app store. But this is something that we're used to. I'm not surprised that, the Flipboard briefing pane has been replaced by
Grown.
Bixby Home, which includes the Flipboard briefing
yes.
as well. But I just want to read something from the blog post that that Samsung put up before the Galaxy S8 was announced. And this details Bixby in a way that it wants people to understand this is not supposed to be competing with Google Assistant or Siri. Samsung has a conceptually new philosophy to the problem of interacting with machines. Instead of humans learning how the machine interacts with the world, which is a reflection of the abilities of designers, it is the machine that needs to learn and adapt to us. The interface must be natural and intuitive enough to flatten the learning curve regardless of the number of functions being added. With this approach, Samsung has employed artificial intelligence, reinforcing deep learning concepts to the core of our user interface designs. Bixby is the ongoing result of this effort. So in this context, given that Bixby is so ambitious, David, is this just a bunch of kind of empty words? I mean, what is Samsung actually intending for this project down the road?
I don't know if Samsung necessarily knows what it intends. I think Samsung knows that in this age, data collection is very important. Bixby is a really good opportunity to re-up on users and get their consent to access deeper data about the things they do. Knowing what people want is really important, which is something I think Google has a deep understanding of, and that's part of what I think Bixby seeks to also get in on. Bixby Vision, for example. It makes huge sense if Samsung's goal is to develop and create a repository of image and object recognition, artificial intelligence. even if it sucks right now, maybe they get enough data that eventually it gets better. That data is valuable. I think that as a platform, it is very scatterbrained. I don't think Samsung really understands what it wants to do with it yet. I think Michael's point that the kind of the futuristic voice control thing, that seems to be about as articulated as is Bixby's intent and purpose and existence is at this point.
So one of the hallmark features of something like Google Assistant is that the in the back end, Google will try to interpret what you say and give you search results, a single search result that will offer the most complete and cohesive response to that question. We know that that has been gamed, and we could talk for hours about that. But Samsung, in the sense, is trying to incorporate something similar. You know, it talks about cognitive tolerance, which means that it's never going to let you fail outright. It's never going to give you, it's never going to say no. It'll try not to say no. Instead, it'll say, "Is this what you mean? I'll try to give you this," or "I'll, you know, I can't really do this, but are you thinking about this instead?" But the context here is not necessarily the internet. It's stuff that you do on your phone. Now, that actually sounds to me like it's more constraining inherently and reductive than anything Apple or Google or Amazon is working on, right? The fact that you can crop your photo using your voice, to me, that is not progressive in any way. That is actually quite a step back from, you know, the way that people interact with their phones. Because as David said, you know, most people don't really like talking to their phones in that way. They would prefer to use their fingers. So I'm not really sure what the goal is here, other than we just want to be different from these other assistants for different sake.
Yeah, well, that seems to play into a lot of what Samsung does on the software side anyway, right? It's that, like, we use Android as an underpinning because that's how we started this whole thing. And if we could get away from it, we would really like to. So one day we're going to be able to get away from that somehow. And when we do, we'd like your phone to feel exactly as it feels today. So we're just going to paint over everything with our own stuff. That's just what this feels like, an extension of that attitude.
Yeah, I agree. And then, but like Daniel says, the narrower vision for Bixby here compared to something like Google Assistant ignores the fact that, well, knowing what people want and being able to give them results, especially results from the internet, is an integral function of a smartphone. And it's very hard to escape that. And Google kind of does it the best. And there aren't really, it's not like Samsung's going to develop a query engine, which they've been very adamant in saying that Bixby isn't a query engine.
Right.
I see more people using Apple Siri than any of the Google Assistant stuff out in the wild, for what it's worth.
I just don't think a lot of people know Google Assistant is a thing yet.
No, I know.
It's only been on Pixel phones until recently.
Which is why the Bixby thing is also kind of a bummer just for Android ecosystem, because even if it's like theoretical or whatever, or there's something big for it down the line or whatever Samsung's doing, it's existing alongside Google Assistant, which is also trying to reestablish itself and become a bigger thing beyond just the people who know about it. You know what I mean? Like the diehard Android fans. So it's going to be I think it's going to be a really confusing thing for consumers. Even if they do want to talk to their phones, they're not going to know what everything their phone can do, because anyway.
But yeah. Okay, but the thing that I'm seeing from this is the Bixby is not meant to be confined to a phone, and it's not meant to be an overlay for Android. This is very much an Alexa play, where instead of actually helping you buy things, it's helping you interact with an ecosystem of Samsung products that it ostensibly thinks that you own. So, you know, as Amazon makes it easy to start playing music from Spotify or order, you know, more diapers from, over Prime, ideally Bixby Voice would just exist all over the place. And as Michael said, eventually when Samsung does decide to move away from Android, or when the new interface paradigm is not a phone in your pocket, but I don't know, some, you know, yeah, like a comm badge on your, you know, to give yeah, Michael a huge Star Trek boner, a comm badge on your shirt. You know, this is something that I think Samsung is looking for, you know, is eventually to replace screens, not necessarily augment them.
Yeah, and it sounds so cool. It's cool to think about this stuff. It would be cool to see this on a theoretical phone that Samsung shows us at a press briefing and is like, this is what we think about for 2032. It's weird to see it on their number on their prime flagship and half finished to boot. It's weird.
I think that's why I feel like that's why it's so hard to unpackage too, because there's so many different elements of it, and it's like, oh, it's this thing, but it's also this thing, but it only does that thing sort of half the way it's supposed to do it. So, I mean, yeah, we're confused. Think All about right, let, how other people are going to feel.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second, David, because Google ships half finished products pretty much all the time.
You're right. This feels very googly.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I mean, how many times has AP over the last like 2 weeks written about how Google Wi-Fi just stopped working?
Yeah, exactly. Or, I completely agree. Google's not a good consumer product company.
I mean, it used to just be software, right? And you would send an update and it would be fine. But these are things that people rely on every day. You know, if your router stops working, that could be a critical problem for a home business, or I don't know. I mean, I assume hospitals aren't using Google Wi-Fi, but this could be an issue for intranets as well. And I'm just thinking, Google never really apologizes. It just sort of says, well, you know, you're an early adopter and you know what you're getting into, so deal with it. Samsung is I think the biggest mistake it made was waiting until a week before the phone launched to say that Bixby Voice wouldn't be available at launch, rather than actually not shipping voice at launch.
I think that was a blunder on their part. I would bet that there was probably a lot of hard pushing in Korea to try to get it out the door on the phones in the US. But it probably would have been wiser in retrospect, but hindsight's 20/20, to manage expectations a little more wisely. But yeah, I think that Samsung got panned for it especially hard, because I still think that's the only compelling reason for the button to exist. And that makes it feel especially like, are you guys serious about this? And it just makes it very hard to take the whole thing seriously.
All right, so let's move to things that we know Samsung does really well. You know, the camera is not that new. It's not that different from the Galaxy S7 series and the Note 7, but it is updated. It's upgraded. Flo, how have you found the camera compared to the S7, and have you compared it to something like the Pixel?
I'm still working on the Pixel comparison. I'm looking forward to taking it on vacation, I will say, which is coming up, and sort of like testing the limits in a real world, you know, because in the burbs, there's only so much you can test of it. I mean, I used it at the grocery store yesterday just because I just wanted to do a couple quick comparisons, being inside such a poorly lit place with, you know, different colors around. And actually what the GS8 produced, still more vibrant. But it's the low light stuff that the Pixel was performing better at, in my experience. So that's the thing that I still want to take some time to look at. But thus far, I'm impressed with the GS8's doing the low light. I was expecting it to be a little washed out the way the GS7 was, but it's not that bad.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think low light is probably the area of biggest improvement. And clearly it has nothing to do with hardware, because mm-hmm. the hardware, I mean, the sensor is different. We don't know anything about the sensor inside the phone, but it's still a 12 megapixel sensor. It's an f1.7 lens. David, you remarked on Twitter today that, you know, despite the improvements to the S8's camera, you still prefer the Pixel. Can you unpack that a little bit?
It mostly comes down to Google's HDR Plus. And with Samsung, the HDR algorithm, when you're pinpointing your blown out spots right with the focus, it does okay. But Google, the way they handle it on the Pixel is so aggressive in a good way usually. You still end up with photos on the S8 where you've got a very dark focal point on the photo with lots of good contrast, and then everything else is totally blown out. And I think that can be attributed to kind of like a philosophical thing about how you want your camera experience to be, but it also just makes taking a picture a little harder. And the other things I've found, the colors, just like last year, especially when you get into the really saturated shades, Samsung wants to really, really draw those out and saturate the photo.
Oh, yeah. Greens are super green. And yes. Reds are like nearly pinkish.
They are. They are very pinkish. And that, to me, is one of the things that really stuck out. The other thing I kind of noticed, and I was kind of disappointed about, the quick launch on the camera is not very fast. The Pixels is much faster. And
true that.
I've tested it over and over. And I'm like, it has a newer chip. It has a newer Qualcomm Spectre ISP in it. How is it not faster? And didn't Samsung brag about this last year with the S7 about how fast the camera launched? Was that the S6?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was fast, to its credit, by the way. I think it's possible it was faster than what we have going on now.
Yeah, this definitely feels slower for some reason. And that's been kind of a concern for me.
I mean, you're talking about like milliseconds, but yeah, I think it could be, I don't know. I mean, it could just be software launch bugs, but it could just be endemic to the whole way that the company approaches it's software. I mean, they're still jank here.
Yeah, they are. But the pictures are still really good. I mean, I think many people may prefer the output of the S8 to a Google Pixel just because
raise his hand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The contrast, it's very social media shareable content, I would say.
Yeah, Michael,
that's
so,
the nicest thing you've ever said to me, dude.
as somebody who knows David very well on Twitter, that sounds like a very funny comment. So Michael, you clearly do like the S8's camera output. I agree. I think it's fantastic. I noticed that, you know, despite there being a lot of saturation I think overexerting some of those the tendencies to make colors look a little bit less like real life. I do think than the S7 rather. I do think that Samsung has reined in some of its tendencies to try to compensate for the sensor's inabilities. I don't know if that made any sense.
Yeah, you were noticing that.
And the reason
that.
I say that is I did a bunch of tests between the S7 Edge and the S8, and I noticed not only were colors much more accurate on the S8, like accurate as in much more true to life, but there's far less fringing around edges.
Yes, hugely less so.
It looks so much better. The sensor itself gives you cleaner output. So, yeah. So you're getting more grain in low light because there's not artificial softening in low light, and you're getting things like lines, like far fewer moiré lines around things like window panes when you blow photos up to 100%. So overall, I just think the S8 just outputs photos that are far more true to life than the S7.
I agree completely. They've definitely stepped it up. I love the softer, more natural look that the photos have now.
Now, I'm looking at my Pixel comparison photos right now. And yes, I do like the punchier colors. I think that a lot of people, well, we had that whole blind test at Android Central a couple months back where people were voting on phones without knowing, or photos without knowing what phones took them. And I think by and large, people do prefer that, do react sort of unconsciously to that punchier, higher saturation, which is why Samsung does it. But also in low light, you know, the Pixel does this thing where it tends toward this really yellow, green, sometimes orange, white balance when it doesn't have enough light to work with. And the S8 does not do that at all. The S8, I find, has much better low light performance. It has less noise. It has more accurate colors. And I just never prefer the pixels results in those settings.
I think the bigger this, the wider aperture helps so much with this camera. You can't really replace light gathering, and the pixels light gathering and low light is suboptimal.
So here's a quirk. I was noticing that in really, really low light, the Galaxy S8 has a much harder time focusing than the S7. I have to, you know, disclose, I haven't done any comparisons to the Pixel yet, so I don't know how the two phones do. I was far too busy doing the review comparing it to the S7. But compared to the S7, the output is, especially up close, I found the Galaxy S8 far less likely to hone in on a subject. And even with the same shutter speed and the same ISO, while the S8 produces, as I said, more true to life photos, they're not nearly as they don't have nearly as much light to them. So this comes back to the fact that Samsung is clearly trying to rein in a bit of its you know, propensity to fake certain scenes just to get something.
I agree. I think that's true. I still think that the S8 does that thing in the dark that the S7 and S6 both did, where it brightens everything if you're in auto shoot mode, where the photo comes out looking much brighter than the environment actually did, which is okay. I don't dislike it, but it's something I've definitely noticed shooting in low light with the phone.
No, I've had a great time. So the one thing I want to talk about is macro photos. The Galaxy S8 has one of the better macro lenses or abilities to shoot macro photos of any phone I've ever seen. I mean, this is a phone that can produce true bokeh because it has such a shallow depth of field. David, do you think that Samsung it was a missed opportunity not to put a second sensor on here?
I think, you know, okay, so something I actually noticed was, you know, you do that, everybody does this now, where you like send pictures of text to somebody, which is the dumbest thing, but we all do it, right? Where you want to show somebody something, like a menu or like a list or something. The depth of field is so shallow on this camera that the text gets blurred at the edges. It's kind of obnoxious, but it does produce beautiful macro photos. I definitely agree with that. The bokeh is so pronounced that it almost looks a little fake, but in a good way. Like it's hard to believe that a phone can have such a dramatic bokeh effect. I think a second sensor, considering some of the issues that maybe you might have with such a shallow depth of field, it would have been helpful. It wouldn't have hurt anything. I would welcome it, sure.
Interesting. What about, I mean, Michael, you said this on your video that, you know, the second sensor, it may have been, wait, now I'm second guessing myself. Did you mention this?
I did mention it. It depends on what you use that second sensor for. I missed it, yes, because the phone I used immediately before this was the G6, and I used that second sensor for wide angle stuff. And I mean, that just lends so much drama to the sort of shots that I take. And you know, taste aside, I tend to like it. So I missed that a lot, and I was surprised they didn't do that. But you don't need it for this because of the depth of field. You can make really artsy shots.
So I mean, when I was testing the iPhone 7 Plus, you know, one thing that I enjoyed about that longer focal length is that, you know, it does slightly better for portraits, and I'm not talking about the sort of the fake blur the background thing. I like the fact that it's just a further, you know, it's closer. You can get closer to your subject. The S8 has a slightly longer focal length. It's 4.5 millimeter equivalent rather than 4 for the S7. But yeah, other than that, like I do think that the phone would have benefited from a second sensor. And I, you know, we've seen prototypes of the S8 with, or what looks like an S8 with a second sensor. I wonder, you know, what is the ideal combo here? Is it the LG wide angle as a secondary, or is it the Apple you know, extra distance portrait like Flo, what would you prefer?
Between which two?
So you have LG, you have the wide angle camera, you have this you know, amazing ability to shoot landscape photos.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You mean in terms of camera features.
And you have Apple, which is the other end of the spectrum. You have like 56 millimeter equivalent, which you get right up to your shot or right up to your subject. You know, which to you is preferable and which one do you think you would use more?
So I was thinking about this as I was using the selective focus on the GS8, which is just a carryover feature from a couple of camera app reprises ago. So it's not new, and but I was trying that out and just sort of thinking about the fact that it doesn't quite look or act the way that the iPhone's portrait mode does. And then I was just sort of thinking about, that's kind of the thing that I feel I would get the most use out of just in daily life compared to the wide angle availability on the G6. The G6 is fun. I love, you know, being able to jump into that sort of mode whenever I need it. But I'm not in as many situations personally that I would really benefit from that, from paying for that extra feature, or so to speak.
I think it does matter. It depends on how you shoot, right? I think the only answer is to have somebody absolutely lose their mind, a phone manufacturer, and do three lenses. Do three different lenses with three different lenses.
Something
which would
to
be
satiate
the greatest.
Everyone.
Yes.
Something to satiate everyone. I like the wide angle. I really like having it built in, but I'm also a privileged individual who, you know, has these phones at her disposal. So I can pick between them as I want. But if I were to pay for it, I mean, what would matter the most to me?
That's the question.
I can get use out of.
So you would go with the telephoto option, the sort of.
I wouldn't use. I'm not an iPhone user.
I would definitely go for the telephoto too. But that's how I shoot, because what I find myself doing all the time with almost any smartphone I review. And I take a shot that I really like, is the first thing I do is I crop it down. And so I'm already wanting the longer lens. And I get annoyed when I get that noise in there. And I'm like, oh, if only I had some more megapixels or a longer lens to get that framing in the first place. So I would prefer that. I think the G6's wide angle is fun. And it can get you some really stunning kind of point of view shots, especially, you know, in big wide open areas. That's, I think, where really tends to shine. That, and I'm sure real estate agents love it because
Room looks so epic and huge. Yes. But also, even in tiny areas, like I always use this example that I'm convinced no one else cares about, but I love it. Like if you're photographing your meal, not to share on Instagram, but to say like, hey, like I'm always on a plane and I'm like, want to send a picture to my girlfriend. Like, hey, this is what they're feeding us on Lufthansa, the world's best airline. Which I say with not a trace of irony. I love that airline to pieces. you know, it's so great not to have to get your phone up somewhere over your head to capture the whole scene. Like you can put that wide angle lens inches away from something and it looks like you've taken it from a foot away.
It's also
and it's just
more
great.
Subtle. It's way more subtle than lifting your phone up on the plane.
Yes, why is
that man taking a picture of us on the plane?
Of course, I always have a phone loaded into a gyro, though, anyway, and I'm shooting selfies on the sidewalk, so I'm used to people looking at me like a jerk.
You have that Osmo gimbal.
Love it.
It's that. Yeah. What's it called? A gimbal.
Yeah,
that thing. That thing's amazing.
DJI.
That's actually something that I wanted to talk about, because the front-facing camera on here is it's a higher resolution sensor. It's 8 megapixels, and it now is autofocus. So I, you know, as somebody who does a lot of, you know, not vlogging necessarily, but uses the front-facing camera to do some shooting for your videos, is this going to replace the S7 as your de facto vlogger camera?
No, my de facto vlogger camera, even though I don't do a lot of vlogging, was the HTC 10, because it's an optically stabilized front-facing shooter, which was very handy.
Your Snapchat camera.
Yeah, the Snapchat cam. But yeah, no, I mean, I was actually not terribly impressed by I'm glad the improvements are here. I think autofocus is great to have. But this, you know, it's a selfie camera that succumbs to a lot of the same issues that a lot of them do. It
none of you are talking about face masks.
Right, and then you've got the masks.
Come on!
Oh my God, I could not care less. Because it's already there in Snapchat. Like, what are you doing? You're just going to put an animated mask on your face and...
Like I like send them. An animated... I think they're great. I don't know what you're talking
about.
They're
great for people. They're great for Daniel. Yeah, because you don't have to use Snap. You don't have to sign up for an account.
You got to snap it up. You got to stay young at heart, everybody. Get a Snapchat account.
No, we'll stay young at heart. It's fine. But for those who don't want to, it's built into the camera interface.
Yeah.
And you can export it to other apps, too.
Okay, so I apologize if I left abruptly for a second there, but I just got a parcel at the front door, and guess what is in the unmarked white bag, the same one that my S8 came in. It is Samsung Dex. It is a dock.
No,
I got it. I think this is a good segue to talk a little bit about the rest of the S8, given that we have been talking now for over an hour. Okay, so other notable things. So, you know, screen is awesome. Fingerprint sensor and other unlocking features are, you know, not great all the time. Bixby is a bit of a mess at this point. Cameras are great, but not a huge improvement. So why is this phone so notable? And why should people buy it? And that leads me into Dex. David, is this Dex is a, for anybody who's not initiated, Dex is a dock. You put your phone into the dock, and it gives you essentially a desktop experience for Android. David, is this anything that you would use?
I wouldn't use it, but I have a desktop computer, and I don't particularly ever see a time in my life, as long as desktop computers are useful, that I wouldn't. I think that Samsung is targeting a very, I wouldn't say very specific, but this is a very business enterprise-focused product, rather than one that's being aimed at consumers. And I think the amount of attention they've given to it at launch kind of reflects that. I think the vision they have for it is, so if you work at a big corporation and they give you a laptop, well, a lot of people, that's their only computer because they don't want to buy another one. They don't see the need. But maybe at home, you've got like a monitor and a keyboard and a mouse. If you want to remote in one day, or you need to get something done real quick over Citrix, well, yeah, you can use the work laptop for that. But the work laptop's probably not great for personal stuff because it's monitored and it's probably old and kind of crappy just because it's a work laptop. And so Dex is a way to give yourself like a home computing experience without having to buy, you know, another computer. And I think the key thing is it makes sense if you already have everything else, the peripherals for a home computer. If you don't, then I think the financials break down instantly. Then it doesn't make any more sense.
I'm nodding to everything you were just saying.
Same. Yeah, yeah.
I'm just physically nodding.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Bader. Go ahead.
So fine. You have a Bluetooth mouse and keyboard and an extra monitor lying around, but then why not just buy a Chromebox or a mini Windows PC or even a Raspberry Pi, for God's sake? Although you can't really use Raspberry Pi for desktop computing, but regardless, why would somebody choose this? Is it the access to the data, the availability of things that are already on your phone? I'm just curious. Even in an enterprise environment, I don't see this being a particularly big draw.
Well, I think there is. We've all sort of made fun of this concept because the execution has never been right. Right? I mean, even going back before Microsoft Continuum, you had phones that plugged into tablet docks to become tablets. The Asus, that wasn't the Pad Phone. It was the Phone Pad or whatever. It was also a branding nightmare. Pad Phone, yeah. And it was, you know, for all the things wrong with it, there actually was something really compelling about confronting something on your phone that you wanted a bigger screen for. So you plugged your phone into a tablet and suddenly it was on a bigger screen. You didn't have to sync or wait for data to come over or do it like, you know, through the cloud or anything. It just worked, right? And then, well, I'd like a keyboard. Okay, well, you plug that tablet into a keyboard and bam. Like that actually, for all its failings, it actually was a lot of fun and it did lend itself to a mobile-first lifestyle. And this has, you know, this has the potential to do something similar, to do something like what Continuum is trying to do. But given that Chromebooks are super cheap, given that most everyone has a laptop, you know, it's going to be an enterprise play, like David said, and it's not going to get a lot of traction in the consumer space, I don't think. Because the very first sentence of their presentation, once again, I had to write it down because I couldn't believe it. He's like, you know, all those times when you want to get some work done, but you don't have your laptop with you? No, because every time I'm somewhere and I want to get some work done, I have a laptop with me because I usually have a laptop with me when I think that I want to get some work done.
I forgot my laptop
what do you
on
know?
The plane again.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Let's buy another
one. We don't
one.
Live in that world.
Man, yeah. I forgot my Samsung Dex dock on the plane. Now how am I going to get to all my data and files and do my work?
And my 15-inch monitor and my keyboard. Boy.
Sure, you're clearly not the guy who brings his land station to Starbucks.
Clearly not.
Although yeah. I remember you took a photo of somebody who did that at your local Starbucks, or was it a Starbucks? I can't remember. It was
that's
years
more
ago.
Common than you think. That's oh, actually God. For some reason.
I mean,
maybe that's why this exists.
But I just realized, actually thinking about this now, I have a Dex next to me now, and I don't have a monitor. the only desktop like monitor I have is an iMac, and you know, it's not like Apple's going to let me plug in an external peripheral.
Oh my gosh, you don't have a monitor.
No, I
okay,
don't.
Your
because,
TV then. Your TV.
Oh, I guess I could use
because
my TV.
Because the whole point, isn't the whole like secondary point of the Dex is like as a TV, you know, your living room computer? Because if you're not going to be buying a separate like station, you just do this all the stuff in your living room. You check your
yeah,
single people
I guess
will
that's
love
true.
This.
I didn't think about that. But I tend to just cast things to the TV over Chromecast. So it never even occurred to me. But yeah, I guess I'm going to have to set it up on my TV because I have no other outlet for it.
You know what? Why don't you just come on down to Boston and I will film you using it on my monitor.
Okay.
Which
that
now
sounds like
Continuum.
Like a win-win for
it's
both
a win-win.
Of us.
Yeah, it'll be great.
Ooh, can you take the train there?
Yes.
I don't know if I can take a train to Boston from Toronto.
That'd be fun.
I'm sure I could.
Not either. I'll look into it.
Thanks, man. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's continue. Let's talk. Let's kind of finish it up. So we have we've hit all the major points, but we haven't really talked software. Is there anything notable here? I don't hate the launcher, which is, I think is different to David. David, what is there anything in the software that is absolutely infuriating to you, or are you actually kind of tolerating it?
I think Grace UX is for the most part fine, and the launcher, the stock launcher Samsung includes, there's nothing bad about it. It's just that if you've become accustomed to, you know, certain customization options, for example, yeah, you're going to run away because obviously you're going to do that, and it's not a big deal. I think that the thing I would say about TouchWiz these days is that the things that I don't like, I can generally turn off or avoid. And that's fine. You know, for example, the app sleeping behavior. I don't like the idea of Samsung messing with Android's already functional doze system. I don't want apps maybe that I don't use right now, but that I still probably want to serve me real-time notifications if they need to be put to sleep, just because it's things I'm not using them. But I can turn that off, and it's not a big deal. Now, for your average consumer, obviously, this stuff feels a lot more constraining, but most of them probably won't notice it anyway. I find what they've done with the software great. I just find Samsung's complete and utter lack of commitment to, you know, hastening their platform update strategy a bit disheartening.
Yeah. As our Mobile Nation's colleague Chris Mink points out every day, the unlocked Galaxy S7 in the US still doesn't have Nougat.
Yeah.
And there is no reason for, no explanation from Samsung as to why.
Yeah, just because there are not enough customers that they have to actually care about it. I mean, that's probably the basic explanation.
Yeah, that's not satisfactory.
It is not.
I agree. You're right. Flo, what about you? Have you had a good experience with the software? Do you, after using it, do you miss the Pixel?
Sorry. I don't miss the Pixel.
No, not at all.
It can make me miss the Pixel. No, I love the Pixel. Because I love the Google experience. What can I say? I'm a sucker for the Google experience. But I will say I noticed, so there's two things that I sort of noticed firsthand, which was number one, the fact that Samsung kind of tried to make its multi-window capabilities a little more robust by adding like a couple of extra options so you can pop out a window or pin a window to the top and that sort of thing. It's a very minor little addition, but it, you know, it kind of feels like it's there to sort of on behalf of Samsung to be like, hey, we gave you this longer screen. Here are some things you might want to use it for.
Okay, can we put a pin in like the app, the app sticky thing? Because I, when I discovered that, I thought
you
it was useless.
You don't like the app sticky thing.
I like
thing.
It. No, it's a really good idea. It fixes a problem with Android.
Precisely. So yeah, so there's the multi-window, which appreciate it. So that's a, I guess that's a thing that Samsung made a tiny bit better than stock. Okay. Just a tiny bit. The other thing, which I abhor, you know, is the squircles, however you say that word.
Squircles.
Squircles. There you go. See, I can't pronounce it very well. you know, they're just not attractive, quite frankly. I don't find them attractive. I like the icon motif on stock Android, and I like the circles on stock Android, yes. You know, you could change that if you want with a launcher, which is nice. You can also go into the settings, which is great, and you won't have those squircles. I can't pronounce it. You won't have those on your apps, but the Samsung apps will still have them. So, it, you know, it's little things. And also, one more thing. I just want to say, I really appreciate that the interface is just this nice neutral, like black, white. I don't know. The color scheme is just so, it's nice. It's simplistic. It's usable. It's not overtly busy the way that we sort of know Samsung's interface to be. I appreciate it. I really do. I appreciate this direction that it's heading in.
So I agree. 100%, but I'm just wondering, why the hell can't I enable my hotspot from the quick settings? That
oh,
to me,
you can't add that.
Oh, yeah, it's
what's
there
up with
for
that?
Me.
Is it there?
Yeah, it must be a carrier thing. Telus must not like it.
That might be a carrier thing. That's true.
It usually,
that's
is.
Bonkers. That's so weird.
I would imagine actually maybe Telus wouldn't want to do that because
yeah, it's usually a carrier messing. Yeah. With.
All right. Well, then I have nothing to say. I think, you know, there's a lot good here. I find the wireframe icons to be a little bit exasperating in their minimalism. I think they go a bit too far because they just do not fit with the general Android aesthetic.
Well, I mean, not today, no, but like, what was it? Was it Ice Cream Sandwich that first brought us that Tron-like, you know, sort of tech highlights or Honeycomb? It was Honeycomb that had the and Honeycomb is by no means something to emulate, but there were some wonderful little overly tech touches in it. And I feel like this reminds me of that. I like the wireframe stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they're fine if you're looking at the, you know, pre-populated Samsung folder.
Yeah,
but just with the icons strewn among the rest of them, I just I don't know. It's just weird.
Yeah,
fair.
So in my Pixel fanboydom, the first thing I did on putting on a third-party launcher, admitted I downloaded an icon pack. I couldn't deal. I have never used an icon pack in my life. I just had to.
Oh, this is the – see, it's so funny. I was just going to make a different point that I did that for the G6. I couldn't stand the LG software, even though it's better than it ever has been. But on Samsung, I was in the same boat with Bader. There's a great – one of your pull quotes in your review, Bader, is this may be the first Samsung launcher I stick with. And I did that for the whole review. I didn't switch a launcher once. Like I said it's cohesive and it feels earned now. Certainly it's going to be down to personal preference, but at the very least, it all feels like it goes together this year. And I think it's pretty. I like it.
It all feels like it goes together.
Ooh.
You could power ballad.
Thanks. I feel better now.
All right, so a few more things. Edge screen features. Do you guys use them?
Animated GIFs. What?
Yeah. Oh, right. You can control those there.
Because, like,
gonna make
this
so
is
many
a thing
of
now.
Michael Fisher. I'm going to just make all these GIFs of Michael Fisher, and anytime I need a reaction, I'm just going to use a Mr. Mobile GIF.
That's all you need. this is the first year I've actually, like, even gone to the trouble of using any of those features, and I'm not in the flow of it, but I see why people would like it.
I use exactly none of them. Immediately turn it off. It's just something they accidentally touch.
Does nobody crop their screen here? Am I the only one who's always cropping her screen?
What do you crop? Oh, like with it in smart, a screenshot?
Well, because all the the features I'm referring to are the smart select features that are part of the note that were part of the Note 7 software that they brought over. That's the only thing that I find exciting, or not exciting, but worth using in the Edge panel. Because otherwise I don't, you know, use my contacts there. I don't use the app stock. I just like the smart select features. And I don't really know how else to get them without enabling them there.
Do you guys want a pro tip for a thing that'll make you want to use the Edge tab?
Go ahead.
Download the calculator panel. And you will have one thumb access to a calculator at all times.
What?
And you can
you already do yeah. with the Apps Edge.
What it's built into Apps Edge?
No, I mean like you can load it in there.
Well, wait,
no,
are you saying the dial pad?
Like two tabs.
Like there's a whole calculator. A calculator will take up that entire Edge panel.
So the
for
number
you.
Pad is in the Edge.
No, it's not that. It's a calculator. It's not a number pad. It's a calculator for calculator.
Anyway, okay, I'll download the calculator so I can see what you're talking about.
Do it. It's great. It's great.
Makes it all worth it.
Yeah,
totally.
All right, so. Yeah, Edge display. I mean, so that brings me to another point. Did Samsung make the right decision getting rid of the flat panel version of the Galaxy? I mean, this is probably the end of the flat screen flagship from Samsung. David, is that a big deal?
I don't think it's a big deal. I'm curious to hear what everybody's experience is in terms of like palm and finger edge rejection and if anybody's had any problems, because I shockingly haven't, and I had lots of them last year with the S7
same
edge.
Here, no problems at all.
Yeah, it seems like
I've had a ton of problems.
really
Yeah, is it just the way I handle my phone? Like I just constantly accidentally bringing things up. I made a couple accidental phone calls yesterday. That was awesome.
Oh wow.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you earlier. Sometimes it's hard doing this on Skype because it delays and stuff. But anyway, the first thing my mom said, by the way, when I told her about the new phones was, which one has the Edge? That's the one that I want. So
because it looks good. I mean, and that's why they're doing it.
Yeah, that's all my mom cared about. She said, I'm going to buy the Edge one. So there you have it.
I think it comes down to the fact that 2 years ago, the S6 Edge outsold the S6. Last year, it was clear that the Galaxy S7 Edge was the real flagship.
Even though it was bigger.
Well, it was bigger, but I don't know whether Samsung anticipated just how much more popular it would be. You know, given in the US, when we buy things, like the price of phones is not really, it rarely comes into the conversation because of the way that carriers sell them. Everything is $0 up front. So, and in Canada too, we have subsidies. So the Galaxy S7 was $120 cheaper than the Galaxy S7 Edge, but both of them were relatively affordable, because they're subsidized. And I think it's the same in the US. I just imagine that the trend towards bigger displays and, you know, something that's different led people to buy the curved phone. Otherwise, Samsung wouldn't have gotten rid of that flat version.
Yeah. And like, you know, I forgot who said it first a second ago, but it looks great. And it's a really smart thing to build that into both sizes and make it available and be like, well, now every phone we sell in this series has this immediately apparent visual distinction on a shelf.
Yeah, I think that's the visual distinction thing is huge. Samsung has struggled for years to give their smartphone brand that visual identity that is uniquely theirs. And I think the curved screen is it. I think that is, until everybody else does it, then they're going to have to find something else. So,
right.
Well, I mean, I'd argue the front facing, the home button was the visual distinction for so long. So that's no longer a thing.
That is true. Definitely.
RIP. All right. Final thoughts. You know, how long are you going to use this, David, before you before you go back to the Pixel.
Well,
because I think some people are in that boat.
Yeah, I'm going to probably go back to the Pixel pretty fast. I just, I like it more. Pixel has its problems, but I mean, the S8 is great. The S8 Plus is maybe a little bit big for me. I like big phones, but this one sits real awkward in my pocket, and especially when I'm sitting down, it wants to fall out, and that's a problem that I can't, I guess a
Let
case.
Let me out of here.
Yeah, I could get a case for it, but I hate phone cases so much because I have the luxury Same. Of reviewing smartphones. I mean, that's the only reason I hate phone cases is because I can. but I don't think I'll be using it that much longer. I'm going to ask for a Verizon unit so that I can actually properly use it with my phone number. But the fingerprint scanner, man, it makes interacting with the phone a kind of a bear for me.
Huh. Does it matter that it's running 7.0 rather than 7.1.2?
To me personally right now, no. But it probably will matter like 4 months from now when Android O comes out and Samsung's like, what's that?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely something to keep in mind. Flo, what about you? Has this sort of become your go-to? Or are you... I mean, we're all very privileged to have choice and I think that is something that we have to say up front. But will you go back to another phone, or do you think you'll stick with this for a while?
In the real world I guess in another reality where I'm not covering Android phones for a living, I would have purchased the Pixel in October, which is what I did, and I would have stuck with it. And I'm at the same point now where even after reviewing the device, I mean, am I crazy about the GS8? Plus, especially in Orchid Gray, absolutely. I mean, it's a stunning device. And to that end, David, I already have a couple of cases lined up for how to outfit it. But if this were, you know, plain Jane Flo, then I would be perfectly satisfied sticking with my Pixel. And I mean, the Pixel's still my daily driver right now. I don't plan on leaving it by virtue of the fact that it's the latest, absolute latest version of Android. And I want to be on that because that's, you know, that's what we cover. And I want to be with that movement, so to speak.
Yeah. Michael, what about you? Are you going back to the Xiaomi Mi Mix after this?
LOL.
Wow. No, I have already moved on. But I always say that the very last question or the least useful question any reader or viewer can ask me is like what I carry. Like people should not carry what I carry. You know, the Galaxy S8 is going to be a really great phone for a great, great many people. And it's never been my style. So no, it's so gorgeous and it's so cohesive and it's certainly the best Samsung phone I've used since the Note 7 RIP. But no, yeah, I tend to like something that is a little rarer.
So I mean, that I think is probably a better question for you is, does this phone leave you with a predominantly positive impression?
Yeah, and it does. Yes. Yeah, for all its issues, you know, David said it right. You know, the Pixel has its problems, but I still like it. It's because it has assets that outweigh those negatives. And for me, I feel like this is the anti-Pixel in some ways, because the Pixel is so wonderful in terms of the way it runs Android. It's a sublime experience in almost every way from a software side. But then I look at the hardware and I'm like, this is the most heinous phone I've ever seen. I think the Pixel is the ugliest thing ever. And the S8 doesn't have terrible software; it has okay software, but it's such beautiful hardware that it sort of feels like the anti-Pixel. And maybe that should have been my review headline.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Missed opportunity. Yeah.
That actually is a really good title.
Well, I would have used that too. Nobody can use it now.
No, I'm just gonna ban you from the Android Central back end so you can't publish it. that's a great point. So I think, you know, if we're all sort of spent on our impressions, I think we should probably end this marathon here because I can only speak for myself, but I know that we were talking about it before the show. We are all exhausted because this has been a marathon over the last few days, especially yesterday. I was up until 3 a.m. last night making sure that everything was ready for this review. So I'm sure that we all want to go and take a nap.
Plus, there's more stuff to use down the line. And I mean, there's more, there are more things that we will discover about these phones. This is such a limited amount of time we've spent with them thus far. And, you know, as with every phone, it's down the line where you really start to see the wonder of the thing that you've purchased, or so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a run-in period, and, mm-hmm. and Bader just got decks. Like, this phone has got at least two more videos in it for me, or three more, counting the one year roundup. Like the Bixby video, whenever Bixby comes out, that's going to be huge one way or the other. And Dex is just going to be so much fun to use. And I'm so jealous, Bader, that you get to use it first.
I may not be able to get to use it, so we'll see.
Feel free to send it on down.
All right. Well, I'm going to end things there. I want to thank everybody for joining us. David, thank you for being on the show. I really, really appreciated you coming on with such short notice and for giving us your very, like, you know, you write so succinctly, but I haven't had the pleasure of having you on a podcast, so I really appreciate your insights here.
Thanks, Dan. I don't think anybody's ever called me succinct.
Sorry, maybe, well, clearly, not succinct. Succinct may be the wrong word. We're all a bit loquacious, but yeah, you articulate yourself very well, so thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
Where can people find you on the internet if they want to read or watch more from you?
Well, they can find me on Twitter. My handle is like indecipherable. Just type my name, David Ruddick, and of course on androidpolice.com.
All right. Flo, thank you for being on. Where can people find you other than Snapchat, stealing all the lenses? And I really want to talk to you about those world lenses because they're super interesting, but we'll have to do that next week.
I want to try them out and see what they're like, because you know me, I like my augmented reality. Anything to escape, right? Well, you can watch me and how I escape if you want on Snapchat at OhThatFlow or on Twitter at OhThatFlow. Watch me delve into madness. And also, you can read my stuff on Android Central. My review, again, is on iMore. So,
which is linked from my review on Android Central. So if you don't want to find it, you can just go to mine and find it through that.
And and Tuesday nights, All About Android on the Twit Network.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're doing that later today.
Oh, yeah. Today's the GSA unpacking as well.
Oof. Before we move to Michael, I just want to ask you something. One of your Snapchat stories of the last couple of days was about the history of the Transamerica building. I want to know so much about that. Why were you talking about that? And like, what's the big deal about that building?
Well, the Salesforce Tower in San Francisco is now going to be the tallest tower. And you guys know that egg in London?
Yeah.
The egg building? I call it Salesforce Tower kind of like the equivalent of that. It's just this thing that stands out. It doesn't match with the rest of the buildings. It's just like, you know, we've all been complaining about tech taking over San Francisco. So it's like the ultimate Salesforce right in the middle, changing the skyline like so drastically. It's just been a big drama for the Bay Area, because a lot of people are bummed. It's going to like shade the city a little more. It's going to change this, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, a lot of controversy over that. And the Transamerica Pyramid is the triangle building in downtown San Francisco. And it's my absolute favorite.
It's so iconic. Building.
And it's the safest place to be in an earthquake in San Francisco.
Really?
There you go. Yeah. Because of the way it's built. It's a triangle. So the earth can't... I think it depends on the earthquake, actually. But anyway...
Well, you are my personal Snapchat West Coast teacher.
I try.
So thank you for that. All right. Michael Fisher, Mr. Mobile, thank you for being on the show. Where can people find you?
Thanks for having me. People can find me on YouTube at The Mr. Mobile, THEMRMOBILE. And I'm at The Mr. Mobile on all the social destinations as well, except for Snapchat, where I am Mr. Mobile Snaps. And Yeah, I don't do building tours. I correct typography errors on signs in my house while drinking beer.
you should up. Yeah, I hope you saved that snap.
I did.
You should
I did upload that one
because it was hilarious.
That was a fun story. Yeah, Snapchat's fun. Bader, you should be on it more often. It's a great time.
You have to be silly. I can't get into it.
Come on. Sure you can. It's a great time.
It's like being at Disneyland constantly.
Oh, that sounds awful.
No, the fun parts, not the magical kingdom. The other parts.
It's funny because Snapchat is single instance, unlike Instagram. So I always forget to log in whenever I go onto a new phone, and that's why I never use it.
That's part of it.
True. That is annoying. Yeah.
All right. Well, my name is Daniel Bader. You can find me on Twitter at JourneyDan. You can find our work at AndroidCentral.com. You can find us every week on the Android Central podcast. Thank you for tuning in. This has been another marathon. I know some of you like these longer shows, so thanks for sticking around if you are still listening. And we will see you, or we will talk to you next week, probably with less S8 stuff, but hey, we'll probably end up talking about it most of the show anyway. That's it for us. We'll see you again. Bye.